On the meeting, please. Thank you very much. So welcome, and welcome all of you to the regular meeting of the San Luis Coastal Unified School District. It's May 10th, 2011. And the board did meet in closed session, and we had a conference with our labor negotiators. We discussed our negotiations with the San Luis Coastal Teachers Association. Do we have a consensus on the order of business? Okay. We did not take any action in closed session on that.
No problem.
I think Mrs. Rogers is trying to make a motion here.
Yeah. I'll move approval of the minutes of the meeting of April 11th.
Second.
We have a motion by Mrs. Rogers and a second by Mr. Angel. Any discussion? All in favor? Aye. Opposed? Carries 5-0. We have a special board meeting on May 3rd. Do we have a motion for May 3rd?
I'll make the motion to approve the May 3rd minutes.
Okay, it's been moved by Mr. Buckman. Is there a second?
I'll second it.
Seconded by Mr. Quisenberry. Any discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Carries 5-0. Let's move on to our student representatives. And why don't we start with Jonisha?
Janisha Moore.
Janisha Moore from Pacific Beach High School.
Hello, school board members. My name is Janisha Moore. I'm a junior at Pacific Beach High School. Both Francisco and Sandra graduated this year, so I will be our school new representative for board meetings. First item of interest. After the completion of fifth market period, over 82% of our students earn 9 credits or better.
Yeah.
So far this year, we have an average of over 80%. In addition, last market period, we had over 90% average daily attendance, which meet another of our school-wide goals this year. For the California High School Exit Exam, we had overall passage rate of 68%. However, when looking at 11th and 12th grade students who had the opportunity twice or more at our school, our passage rate is above 80%. Either way, these numbers are improvement of last year's. So far, the students we have graduated are 32 students. We are expecting as many as 18 more students to graduate this in the next 6 weeks. If this happened, Pacific Beach High School will have its highest graduation ever. Last Friday, Terry Jacobson took 6 students to volunteer with the Special Olympics. All students volunteered enjoyed the experience and are hoping to volunteer again in the future. Lastly, both RJ and myself returned, RJ Miller and myself returned from RILA Youth Leadership Conference. Where we had to make contact and network with students from all over the states. I was very excited to meet new people, such as exchange students speaking different languages. That was very interesting to me. We both had a great experience and are grateful for the opportunity. Thank you. Good job.
Well.
Okay.
thank you very much, and it's really good news to hear about the great stuff that's going on at PAC Beach. You picked quite a meeting to have as your inaugural meeting with all these people here, but I think it's neat that you were able to share what's going on out there at PB. Julie.
All right. Hi there. I'm Julie Hausman. I'm the student representative from San Luis Obispo High School. Alrighty, so on our agenda for tonight, this past weekend we had our prom. The theme was Midnight Masquerade, and we had over 500 students in attendance at the Madonna Expo Center, and it was pretty successful, I would say. Probably one of the best dances we've had this year. Last week we had our open house. That went smoothly. Dr. Prater was in attendance. I'm not sure who else, but I remember seeing him. This week is our Teacher Appreciation Week, so each day we are doing something special for the teachers. A lot of it has to do with food. On Monday, we had some muffins and juice and fruit in the little teacher room. Today was cookie day. Tomorrow is give your teacher a note day. And Friday, we're having our teacher appreciation assembly where the teacher of the year will be announced. And next, we had, okay, for awards, we had 4 Slo High students go to the Skills USA National Finals, and that is Zoltan Shapiro for computers, Sean Gu, I believe also for computers, Michael Mullen and Sam Kastenholz for the 4 AAA troubleshooting. They are the state champions, and they are going to Michigan, I believe. I'm not sure about that one, but yeah, so we're pretty proud of them over at our school. In the recent FFA state finals over spring break, we had a lot of winners. The top 5, number 1, the livestock judging, Ashley Judge was the first place individual. She's a senior. Ashley Judge also got first place in prepared speaking. In extemporaneous speaking, Emma.
Your opinion, and if there are things on the agenda that you would like to speak to, just let me know, put on your microphone so I can see the red light, and feel free to comment. Okay, thank you. Let's move on then to SELPA Community Advisory Committee Golden Apple Award, and that's going to be presented by Jackie Kirk-Martinez. Actually, Michelle Rounsen and Naomi Blakely as well.
Good evening. Every year we get to come before you and talk to you about the Community Advisory Committee. I am just going to be up here briefly to introduce our district representative, and that's Naomi Blakely. She is also our program specialist, one of our program specialists for San Luis Coastal. So I will turn it over to her. Thank you.
Thank you, Jackie. Michelle Rounsen, who is our other district representative, is a parent, and she couldn't make it tonight, so she sends her sincerest regrets. I'm wondering if Susan Siegelwood is anywhere here. She is also a parent in our district and had a lot to do with the nomination, but she's not here, so we will press on regardless. The Golden Apple is an award given to honor a special educator, and for the year 2010, for this school year, recipients are nominated throughout the county, and representatives from our CAC pick only 5 applicants out of the multiple special ed nominees to be honored each year. The Community Advisory Committee, or CAC, which is made up of a group of parents and professionals representing students with special needs of San Luis County, has made a commitment to honor special educators with a Golden Apple Award. Special educators were selected for their exceptional contributions in their efforts to help support and educate students with special needs. I'd like to mention that we also, our district should be very proud of Cammie Richardson, who is a first-year teacher teaching special day class at the high school, who received a nomination as well, which is just outstanding and well-deserved. So the San Luis Coastal recipient is Dawn Addis. Come on up, Dawn. She gets to ogle it while I tell you about her nomination. She was selected by the district director, Jackie Martinez, who in turn collaborated with parents of students in her class. And in fact, I'm going to give this to you because this was the text of your nomination, which you could read at your leisure. Just some background. Dawn graduated from San Francisco State with a bachelor's degree in art and Spanish. She has credentials in K-12, mild, moderate, K-8, multiple subjects, and single subject in art and Spanish. Dawn received her master's in special ed from San Francisco State. Dawn's been with the district since 2001. She's currently teaching the 7-8 SDC class at Laguna Middle School. Dawn also worked at Pacheco for 2 years with the Spanish Language Reading Intervention Program. Additionally, she worked at schools throughout the district in the Resource Specialist Program teaching science, history, math, and study skills at both the high school and elementary school levels. Dawn's been involved in comprehensive literacy and bringing that model to the middle level. She's currently helping to develop next year's mild to severe middle level learning center. She is the specialist representative for the SLCTA Executive Board and a member of the District Collaborative Action Team. Dawn believes the middle level provides a unique window into the lives of her students as they transition from child to young adult, learn to be social beings in their own rights, and begin to see themselves as the adults they will one day become. It's been a joyful experience for Dawn to witness this time of change and maturation in her students. Each day she learns something new that benefits the person she is as a teacher, mother, wife, colleague, and community member. Her work has been life-changing. I know that one of the quotes that she will read later is that the students feel safe in her classroom, safe and supported. We congratulate Dawn on this well-deserved honor.
And congratulations, Dawn. Next, we get to talk about the teachers of the year, and this will be presented by Rick Robinette.
Thank you, Mr. President. Well, this is the time of year when we start to, from Los Osos Middle School, science and leadership teacher Dan Hoskins. From Del Mar Elementary School, fourth grade teacher Diane Lehman. From Hawthorne Elementary School, EL teacher Jill Nuno. The Student Services Department nominated somebody who's received this before already, Karen O'Donnell, 7th and 8th grade special ed teacher. I didn't see Karen. From Sinsheimer Elementary School, kindergarten teacher Patty O'Neill. And from Morro Bay High School, English and Social Science teacher Jennifer Salio. And of course, this is just a small representation of a lot of excellence in our school district. Congratulations to all of you. You can go ahead and be seated, but we're going to have a reception in your honor afterwards. So I would like to bring up the principal of Bishop's Peak Teach Elementary School to talk about our actual winner for the Teacher of the Year this year. So there he is, Mr. Block.
Thank you. Rick just said a moment ago, in a room full of fantastic educators, knowing a couple people up here, in the application process from Bishop's Peak and Teach, this group came together and started putting together some words and some recognition for a staff member. And as those different experiences, some past colleagues of Elaine's are in the room, started to chip in, the resume was incredible. It was so impressive from the work she's done in our district at numerous schools, on school committees daily, district committees, state committees, even went to Washington, D.C. It was amazing to read the resume of Elaine Rosenfield. I'm not quite done, but I'm going to have Elaine get the applause and hear some of these big words up here. I know a committee of her peers picked this, and they got it right. She is absolutely amazing to work with. After 4 years, I am blown away by her generosity, her caring every day. 33 years doing great work for all kinds of kids, families. And as I started to think about Elaine, she works with those groups so diligently. With our staff, she's always a cheerleader for every staff member, goes around rooms, checks in with people before SST meetings, as she's our SST chair. Just if she feels that somebody needs to be checked in on, Elaine is there, myself included. Parents in our community, every fall, Elaine makes a visit to all the homes of her students in her classroom, been doing that for numerous years, and I know that the students and families really connect with her in that way. And it's the cookies. She brings them cookies. And in the same way that she goes around to the staff, she really connects with her parents, not just the parents of her kids, but all school, especially the ones that are in need. She has the biggest heart that anybody could imagine. She really turns the students on to learning. She is an advocate for comprehensive literacy, our new anything that Elaine might hear about. She's gone to Barnes & Noble or gone to Amazon.com, comes to my office with the book in hand, and says, I just found the greatest thing. So she is an active learner. And above all else, her work with kids is absolutely amazing. Every day she goes above and beyond. Oftentimes I'll see her in the summer working with kids. Sometimes she'll say, Dan, I know I should have probably asked you after she's done it for 10 sessions, but I really wanted to give this kid an extra boost before third grade. Every day in her classroom, she opens up the world for these kids, and all of this with very little fanfare, and I am privileged to work with her.
Teacher of the Year Award. As a group and as individuals, they delighted and even chortled at my cluelessness when the award was announced by Dr. Prater at the end of a fire drill. I, on the other hand, was much too busy counting heads to make sure that I had all the students, including the three at speech, wondering about the two who were at dentist appointments and the one who went to the office for a Band-Aid. I got them all. I was absolutely clueless and blown away. And so to my very sneaky colleagues at Bishop Speak and Teach, thank you. I've always been grateful that I get to do really, really important work. Every day, I get to be part of helping children develop communication and thinking skills. It doesn't get better than that. So to all the teachers who have helped make this possible and who've helped make me a better teacher, to all the students I've had the pleasure to get to teach over the years, and to all the parents I've been delighted to work with, thank you for this award.
On behalf of the board, Elaine, congratulations. I've known you for a long time, and what a teacher. And thank you, on a personal note, thank you for letting me come into your class and read earlier in the year. It was just really, really a fun thing for me. I haven't done it in a while. And
you're all signed up for next
week. And we'll do it. Right now, the board would like to call a recess in the meeting. We'll take about a 10-minute break to honor our Teachers of the Year. So we have goodies in the back. Is that correct? I'm sorry? Cake by Valerie Harrigan. And if you've never had Valerie Harrigan's cake, you need to take it. I understand it's Black Forest cake. Mr. Buckman and Mr. Angel and Mrs. Roger. Oh, there's Mrs. Roger. Well, first of all, before we do anything else, I think we should acknowledge Valerie Harrigan, who's in the back for the great cake. Thank you, Val. That was great. The next thing we have is correspondence, and the board hasn't received any formal correspondence. However, we did. I have personally received several messages from teachers. At least I got a message from the Edson family talking about the exchange students, and then we did receive a piece of correspondence from someone about the potential Pacheco preschool. Yes, Mrs. Roger.
I'm wondering if we've consulted our attorneys regarding that.
Comment. And we have them where, Mrs. Holmes? At the door as well. Because of the time constraints, we'd ask that you not repeat the points that others make. And the written comments will be collected and copies will be provided to each and every board member. In addition, they will be part of the public record and be available for anyone to read. If you need a form right now, please raise your hand and someone will give it to you. Okay, if you decide later, they're over there by the door. And if you've made written comments, Mrs. Holmes will collect them from you. And then finally, the board can't comment on your statements, but we will listen attentively. We do have a negotiations process that both SLCTA and the district have agreed on, and we intend to follow those processes. We can't negotiate in public. What we're going to do is Mr. Angel will call the names of the people who are going to speak, so please be ready when it's your turn. And are you ready, Mr. Angel? 3 minutes for each person, please. And then he'll call the person whose turn it is, and then he'll call the person who would be next up. So kind of think about that as being on the on-deck circle.
So Rose Juhas and Tony Evans, you're on deck.
Hello. My name is Rose Juhas. I teach the two-year Algebra Course 1 program at Los Osos Middle School. I have been a teacher in this district for 10 years. I worked in office management in the private sector for 10 years prior to teaching. As a result, I'm quite comfortable with budgets and working with numbers. I'm here to share some information with the taxpayers of San Luis Obispo based on some of my own fact-finding information. I would appreciate an explanation from the school board as to why there is such a great disparity in what teachers in this basic aid school district are paid in relationship to district administration, in particular our superintendent's salary. I have a list of 8 basic aid school districts in the state of California. I took all the teacher salaries at step 10 and compared them to where I am on the SLC USD salary schedule to find out how different my salary was. In comparing my salary to all of my fellow teachers in these 8 basic aid school districts, I make less in each case, as much as $38,000 less for the same level of experience. Taking the average, I make 74% of what they make. So, I was curious, what do district office administration salaries look like in all fairness? I used the same 8 basic aid school districts. I took all the superintendent salaries and compared them to the SLC USD superintendent salary. In comparing 4 of the 8 districts, our superintendent salary is greater. In the other 4 districts, it is less. Taking the average of all, our superintendent makes 98% of what fellow superintendents make in those very same 8 basic aid school districts. With all due respect, Dr. Prater, you mentioned in your recent newsletter that SLC USD teachers are some of the highest paid in the region. We are not the highest paid. There are a handful of others who are not basic aid and make more. I am sensitive to the current economic times for many people in our community. I also believe that our colleagues in the 8 basic aid school districts feel the same. However, there are obviously other school districts with healthy budgets like ours who are putting their tax dollars directly into teachers' salaries. They are providing their teachers and their administration a livable wage. We should be proud of the fact that we are spending our tax dollars in this manner. However, we are not. There is definitely a disparity. I'm very concerned over the message that this sends to the community. Let's start closing the gap. We need to decrease administrative salaries while increasing teacher salaries. To be quite honest, 2% is a baby step in this process. It will take much more than that to close the gap. I would appreciate your reasoning for spending the community's tax dollars in this fashion. Thank you.
Mr. Evans and Mr. Buckmore, you're on deck.
Tony Evans, kindergarten teacher at Los Ranchos Elementary. And for 36 years, I've been a strong advocate for the students that I've taught. For the last 31 years, I have been in a leadership position advocating for teachers. And tonight may be the last time I do that, so I'm reading a letter from my colleagues at Los Ranchos. Approximately half of our staff signed this letter. We have almost a third of our staff are temporary teachers, and so we did not expect them to sign. And it was with, as I say, great pride that I represent my colleagues once again. So, dear board members, we, the educational staff at Los Ranchos School, along with our teaching colleagues across the district, honor and compensate us in this way. This ability to spend is also evidenced by the recent addition of top administrative positions, bringing the sum of administrators to a number higher than this year. There is also a willingness to spend money on the planned placement of preschool programs on many campuses and other intended expenditures based on the superintendent's and board's recently adopted 10 initiatives. We are concerned about the expensive plans for next year with no consideration of a COLA increase on this year's teachers' salary schedule. We encourage you to direct the district to return to the negotiating table. We have high hopes that you will show us that you value our heartfelt commitment to the education of the children in the San Luis Coastal Unified School District. And if I have a little bit of time, I would like to give some institutional history. One of the things that many of you may not know is that as a basic aid district, our revenue cycles differently than revenue limit districts. Many of you may remember 10, 11 years ago when we were closing schools and making program cuts, while our neighbors around us were getting 5 to 10% raises. We are a different entity. We don't cycle the same.
Great. Thank you, Mr. Evans.
Mr. Buckmore, and then Mr. Orton is on deck.
Good evening. My purpose for being here tonight is to encourage you, the school board, to direct your representatives to return to the bargaining table with an offer that includes a modest on-schedule COLA. I believe there have been significant efforts towards a creative solution, in particular Dr. Prater's concept for flex days. However, a statement in the recent newspaper article, and I quote, "An ongoing raise is not a fiscally prudent thing to be looking at right now," coupled with at least two board members' emails stating that it is not time for an on-schedule raise, seemed to create confusion when contrasted with the superintendent's newsletter that we declined a 2.15 on-schedule pay raise. But I believe that this confusion could be easily resolved if we were to meet again before fact-finding. I can't feel I'm alone in that belief. I'm sure Mr. Miller, for one, who we all know is a big fan of meetings, right? He loves those meetings. He would relish the opportunity for another meeting to clarify our situation. So once again, I would like to respectfully request that you, the school board, direct your representatives to return to the bargaining table with an offer that includes a modest, on-schedule COLA. Thank you.
Ms. Heck, you're on deck.
Good evening. Paul Orton, counselor at Morbay High School and chairman of negotiations. My job tonight is to give you a little lesson in mediation, and this is as much for the teachers here as it is for the school board. Mediation happens when face-to-face negotiations doesn't yield an agreement. In mediation, both groups are in two different rooms. The mediator goes between the two groups. There's no way that Dr. Prater could know what the offer was from the mediator because it was delivered to us. We know the offer. There were seven of us in the room. We wrote it down. We even have a picture of it. For him to put that offer out, which is inaccurate, is bad faith bargaining. Even today, he said he was at the table. There was no possible way he's at the table. That's not the way mediation works. After that, we had heard that maybe the mediator misrepresented the offer from the district. So I saw Rick Robinette on April 11th and said, if there was a miscommunication, let's go back to the table. Let's hear what your offer is. Rick said, now the offer is zero. So what is it, school board members? We don't know if it's zero, if it's what Dr. Prater thinks the mediator told us. Everyone's confused, and it's bad faith bargaining. There's a protocol to follow. We asked you to follow the protocol. Please invite us back to the table and explain what's going on. Thank you.
Debbie Heck, and then Mr. Kotzer.
Good evening. My name is Debbie Heck. I'm a member of SLCTA, and I'm also on the negotiations team for the teachers' union. Not to sock it away in a ridiculously large amount of money in reserves for a rainy day that may never come. If this school board truly believed that there was an impending financial crisis that justifies this 45% budget reserve and accounts for a so-called rainy day, then how can the school board justify the two new district level administrative positions just established at a cost of well over $300,000 a year? And how can you justify giving upper level management a guaranteed 2% cumulative raise every year for the next 10 years? Something is very, very wrong. Teachers are the differentiating factor in education, not the buildings, not the district administrators on the Hill. We are the ones who meet daily with the students. We are the ones who are charged with educating, protecting, and encouraging our students to dream and to move towards a bigger and greater future. I recently attended a Channel Islands Teachers Union Awards night at the Madonna Inn, where teachers and community members are honored. How encouraging it was to witness a school board member from the Guadalupe School Union District being honored by their teachers union. He was truly a champion of students and teachers. But what was more amazing were his comments that clearly showed his deep respect and value of teachers. After hearing his words, I realized that I wished that my school board and district office administrators truly felt the same way about their teachers and then would act on it by coming back to the negotiations table. Thank you.
Mr. Kirkhoffer, and then Ms. Blakely, Ms. Blakely, you're on deck.
Hello, I'm Colby Kratzer. I'm in Los Osos Middle School, and I have some comments for the board. Thank you, Mr. Chair, for recognizing the public to come, particularly your teaching staff. I'm at column 3, step 25. For those that know about that pay schedule, that's the Bachelor of Arts degree plus 60 units. Actually, I have over 90 units of postgraduate study. and credits, and I'm at step 25, which is the highest. In other words, I can go no higher. There's no possible advancement for me, and haven't been now for several years. I am also holding a specialist certification on my credential and have just passed the 3 CTEL tests. Pretty stressful, caused my blood pressure to go up, but that's the way that goes. I'm 65 years old this fall, and I hope to retire sometime, or, as with my father, virtually be carried out of the classroom. Education is being scapegoated by society right now, as our superintendent and others recognize, and I feel like an old goat. With the rising cost of gasoline, food, and college tuition for my grandchildren, I fear for my family's future. With the amount of money taken from my paycheck for health insurance rising each year, my take-home pay is shrinking. After all this time in the profession, my take-home pay is shrinking. Due to inflation, I need a COLA. That's a cost of living adjustment just to stay even. Particularly disheartening is seeing our administrators award themselves more assistance, extraordinary salaries, with annual increase of 2% per year for a decade, free gas accounts, and hoarding of our tax revenues to create a false sense of propriety. Return to the table, please.
Ms. Blakely, and then Anne-Marie, Ms. Stoneman.
My name is Naomi Blakely. I've been a district-employed teacher for 35 years and a union member since 78, give or take a year. There are statewide protests this week to address the cuts districts across the state are experiencing, affecting students, teachers, and families. Education in California is in a state of crisis, yet we have many questions unanswered locally, clouded by miscommunication and, some would say, deceit. Does the district have a deep reserve of money? Is the district broke? Who to believe? If there's money, should it only be spent on kindergarten through graduation? The battle over money on the salary schedule for teachers makes me sad beyond measure, especially at this point in time. What makes me more sad, however, is that this battle has distracted us from an issue of great importance and one that's extremely close to my heart. The adult school program supporting adults with developmental disabilities, funded since the 70s, is soon to be no more. Adult schools exit by means of job termination will leave the students still served by nonprofits, but at a greatly reduced rate of quality. The quality, professionalism, long-term planning and implementation, and training that our adult ed teachers provide will not be replaced. Funding to those nonprofits is being slashed on a regular basis. Education's budget by the year's end, and their students are looking at the foundations of their programs eroding. A plague on both your houses, not the Capulets and Montagues, the district and the union. If each group feels that this collateral damage is acceptable, I guess there's nothing more to add. But I remind you that we're talking about people and programs who serve those who cannot advocate for themselves to the degree that they would like. I do not believe this is acceptable collateral damage of the budget, and furthermore, it's not too late to prevent it from happening. I believe the silent majority of my peers and families believe the same way. All that it would take is a commitment on the parts of everyone associated with our district to acknowledge that this ongoing support is the right thing to do. Not popular, not cost-effective, not appealing to a demographic that's guaranteed to respond en masse, just doing the right thing for the right reasons. I implore the leadership in the union, district, and board to lead by example. We're in a tight budgetary time, but we shouldn't turn our backs on what is right. Would I keep my place on the salary schedule in order to keep the adult school jobs intact? In a heartbeat. Please find a way to make this a priority. Thank you.
The last yellow form I have is Anne-Marie Stoneman.
Hi, I'm Anne-Marie Stoneman. I teach science at Los Osos Middle School and have for the last 10 years. And I'm in agreement with Naomi that I think we need to remember that this is about who we serve, and that we are all public servants, and that we really need to keep in mind that all of the teachers give our hearts and souls every day. And when we read things in the paper that we've all gotten this 3%, I went back with Rose, the first person to speak, our math teacher, and we looked at the numbers, and we're not all receiving 3%, and I wanted the public to know that, that when some of my colleagues were getting 3%, I was getting 1.92. When some of my colleagues are getting 3.6, I get 1.66. That it's not everybody across the board. And I felt that the public should know that that 3% is an average for everybody, but we're not all compensated the same, and we all have the same bills to pay and the same cost of living issues. So we would like you guys to work this out so we can focus on our jobs, which is to serve these kids and not worry about this stuff, because that's your job. That's why you get the big bucks. Thanks.
It's been 20 minutes for the public comment, and I really want to thank everybody for their comments. We appreciate when we hear from the public. That's our job. This is a democracy. So, again, thank you all for coming. The board is not going to respond individually, and so I'm going to leave it at that. At this point, I'd like to move on then to the superintendent's updates. Mr. Miller, would you like to talk about the status of the state budget, please?
Sure. The state budget has been engaged in a process in Sacramento for many months now, with the primary outcome being an election by the population of California for the approval of the extension of taxes. As a result of political maneuvering, that hasn't come to pass. And so what we're looking at for the near future, and what's happening this week in Sacramento, CTA has sponsored a number of events all week long in order to advertise and promote the danger of additional budget cuts and the harm that it'll do to education. They're being joined by firemen and policemen and other agencies that are going to feel the bite of the cuts if we don't extend the taxes. But ultimately, what we're engaged in is an outcome for every student in every district in the state of California. And one of the things I'd like to illustrate is I prepared a couple of graphs. And can you put them up? And Mrs. Holmes will put them up for me. But what they are is a depiction of the fair share of pain and the various scenarios that are related to a funded COLA and a statutory COLA, which are two different things. And we'll start with either one when they come up. Okay, that one's fine. What you see in front of you is a graph in the dark, which would be the amount of money that districts are scheduled to receive under Proposition 98, which includes COLA and growth in the state budget. And you can see that in 2006-2007, the base number was 5,600, and by this time in 11-12 next year, the number should have grown to about 6,600. We know what it should be in 11-12 because the formula calculation for a statutory COLA has, they want everybody to suffer equally as possible. So the difference between those two numbers is essentially how we arrive at our fair share of pain. Could you go to the next one, Kim? Thank you. A statutory COLA and a funded COLA are two different things. In Proposition 98, it states that the amount of money that goes to the education budget shall be based upon a formula, which is called the statutory COLA, because it's written in law. It's supposed to be what we get. And you can see those purple colors, light purple, is the amount of the statutory COLA each year. And you can imagine in our economic model as we exist right now that those amounts have declined in the last 5 years, with a nice little pop-up in 11-12. However, what the state has adopted is a way to deficit schools, and that's called the funded COLA. And in each of the last 3 years, we don't know what they're going to do in 11-12 yet, but in 08-09, 09-10, and 10-11, they have taken money from us, and the COLA has become negative. And in each year, it's a substantial amount of money. And that's from which is born the fair share of pain. The part for our district that we're waiting on the outcomes from the governor about is, what is our fair share of pain going to be next year? This year, it was $2.5 million. Next year, it could be anywhere between $2.5 and $10.2 million. The fair share of pain is expected to be a negative 8.92 COLA, negative almost 9% COLA, plus an additional penalty of $825 per student. That's where the $10 million comes from. So on May 15th is the traditional date upon which the governor presents what he calls his May revise to the January budget, and he's going to tell us, we hope, how he will manage the lack of a tax extension and the impact on schools. One of the things we don't know is how much money we're going to have for next year. One of the things we must do is create a budget by June 15th based on nothing. So we're going to have to put together a budget that has some sort of a cohesive balance to it on the basis of guesswork. And it happens every year. Some years we get it right, some years we don't get it so right. But next year is going to be particularly problematic because the guesswork about the eventual election of extending the taxes, and Governor Brown has dedicated the promise that he won't raise or extend the taxes without the vote of the population. So what political strategy is he going to use in order to make that election come to happen? And when we look at what he has available to him, the best minds feel the possibility is November is an election for Congress and other things. It's not a presidential election this year, but there's an election nationwide on November 3rd. And during that election, we probably will see a proposition or some sort of an election strategy which puts an extension of the current taxes on the ballot. Then the problem is, do the people of California extend the taxes or not? And so we're looking at a long time before we can come to any solid conclusion about what our revenues are going to be in 2011-2012. That's our problem at the moment.
Thank you, Mr. Miller. Mr. Robinette, you're going to be up next, I guess, in talking about student exchange program or exchange student programs.
I did kind of a quick little PowerPoint, nothing fancy here, but as the board may recall, we pulled an item at the last board meeting, an action consent item on international exchange programs. The board had some very legitimate questions about just how are these organizations approved, what are some of the language proficiency issues, what are the numbers of students that we actually have that come into these programs. So I wanted to, I hope this works in there. Is this going to work? Oh, good. I wanted to just give a really quick little update on just some research I did on the program and make some recommendations to the board. This isn't an action consent or an action discussion item, but I wanted to give the background to hopefully kind of make sure we're on the same page with regard to our foreign exchange programs or our international exchange programs. The board policy is actually pretty simple and straightforward. It's a couple paragraphs. It just says we encourage international exchange, our students going to foreign countries and students coming to our country. It promotes global awareness and a moment's notice. So that means these organizations will take full responsibility for putting a student on a plane and sending him home for any academic or disciplinary reason that we deem, and that there will be some sort of an orientation as far as language and culture. Beyond that, we have educational requirements, and I'll address these a little bit more. One is that the student should come to the country with a pretty high degree of English proficiency, and we'll get to this one. Also, they must come with transcripts that we're able to kind of interpret, because students coming into the country will most likely be earning credits with us and in many situations earning diplomas. I think the counselors that might be still in the audience would know that that transcript part is one of the trickiest things we have when we have exchange students come in, and it's kind of interpreting those transcripts. So the district has several oversight responsibilities also, and these are in our administrative regulations. They're not part of board policy, but they're in our ARs. We have the ability to limit the number. of students coming into our program and limit the number of students exiting our schools going overseas. We have the ability to set diploma requirements. Many of the students, especially that come to the States, are actually coming to earn a high school diploma, a California diploma. And so we have the ability to set those, make sure that the transcripts match our graduation standards and they can earn all the units they do need in order to graduate. We have the ability to set deadlines. Currently, all of the sponsoring organizations must have their applications into us as far as being a sponsoring organization by March 15th so that it can be approved by the board. But the actual students that come to the country or students that we send, those deadlines are August 1st currently in our ARs. So we have to know what students are coming to us or what students are exiting on a foreign student exchange by the 1st of August so we're not doing last-minute juggling with our master schedules. We have the ability to establish age, and currently we only allow exchange students between the ages of 15 and 18. So this is a high school program. We do not have exchange programs at the middle school level or below. We are allowed to establish whether students can compete in athletics, and currently we do allow students to be CIF eligible. It's legal according to CIF, and many of our exchange students that come here do compete in interscholastic sports. We, of course, cannot recruit foreign students to come into our country. That's a problem with that, with any CIF issue. And we have the ability to evaluate the program so that in any given year we could say no longer do we want you as a sponsor organization for whatever reason. We have the ability to review and accept and deny individual applications. And we have the ability to establish English proficiency, which was one of the board's questions at the last meeting. So English proficiency is established in one of three ways, really. One is two are tests. The test that is recommended is called the SLEP, the Secondary Level English Proficiency Test. This is a middle school, high school test. And so it is designed so that students can, if they pass this test or get a scaled score at a certain level, they should be able to function in a middle school or high school classroom from an academic functional level. The other test that people may be more familiar with is the TOEFL. The test of English as a foreign language. This test is actually a college-level exam, and it's actually a little harder to score because it doesn't come up with one scaled score. It has scores in speaking, reading, writing, and listening. And even though we get some of those test scores, it's a little harder to interpret a student's ability. The third way we establish English proficiency is through a writing sample. And I'll get back to some recommendations about that. So what are the numbers? Just over the last 6 years, you can see that we've had between 15 and 24 exchange students in our school system. We have, this year as an example, we have sent five students to foreign countries. So four from San Luis Obispo High School, one from Morro Bay High School. We obviously take in a lot more exchange students than we send away, and that's typically the case. That number of 24 is probably a little high right now. I would say that's having an impact on our school system that might be a little more than we should have. But those numbers are pretty consistent. And they are disproportionate to the high schools. We take in 2 to 3 times more exchange students at San Luis Obispo High School than Morro Bay High School. So some recommendations, and I put these in the form of administrative recommendations. We're not asking the board to take any action tonight. This is a report. If you want to revisit this as an action item at some point, we can do that. But I think that honestly, you raising the issue is the best idea, and for us to just kind of administratively take care of some acts, the program for something exchange. I don't know what it is. Program of something exchange. We also have organizations like Rotary and Cultural Homestay and different groups that have smaller numbers, but my recommendation is that we limit so that we're making sure we have students from all different organizations represented in our school district. And lastly, the recommendation is that we accept a SLEP score of 45 or 50 in that range and a writing sample to demonstrate English proficiency, because this is one of the areas where we probably have the most difficulty. I'm a exchange family. I've had exchange students live in my home, and I can remember years ago. Let me get some water here. Hang on. Having an exchange student from Brazil who had a beautiful written essay. And so I figured when he came to live with me that his English was going to be outstanding. He didn't have any SLEP scores or test scores, but his writing sample was outstanding. Well, he didn't speak any English. And so he came as an EL student. We had to do a lot of work with the school. We had to get translators in Portuguese to kind of work with him to get through the school year. I had an exchange student from Sweden a couple years later whose English was better than mine. He'd be doing this presentation much better than I would. So I think what we really need to be doing is scrutinizing the English proficiency level to guarantee that our staffs aren't overburdened, our families aren't overburdened. And I think that's it. So questions that board might have on the exchange student process.
First of all, before you go, Jim, I just want to thank Mr. Quisenberry for bringing this forward. And
me too.
He's got a question right now.
You're welcome. The SLEP score is one that's incoming, and then we also give them the SELT test. Do we give that to all exchange students now?
Yeah, the SELT test is required for any student whose native language isn't English, so unless we get a student from England or something, we're giving the SELT test. And the SELT exam, all of the exchange students we took in this year were from countries whose native language wasn't English and their native language wasn't English, so all of those students took the SELT exam. All of those students were EL students. So, every one of the 24 students that we accepted this year are technically English learners. That does not mean they're in EL classes, but that's pretty much the norm. And they're coming in as non-native speakers and probably are being classified as EL learners for the most part.
Well, and then that leads to another point I want to make. The other one is staffing ratios. And when we admit these students to the district, do they become part of the overall number of students, and we adjust staffing accordingly?
We make our staffing ratios each year for the high schools based on a formula that includes the current year's level. So these students are counted into that mix. So the staffing that the high schools get have these students infused into it. The interesting thing is, in the past at least, we don't always know how many exchange students are going to come until halfway through summer. We have not made staffing adjustments if we get this huge influx of exchange students in the middle of the summer. So, that comes back to my recommendation of kind of to keep that to that 19 or 20 level so that we're not overly impacting the schools or needing to add staff because of exchange students.
Did you consider that based on the SELT test, which has a 5-level, when you take the overall, there are 5 different levels of making very strong recommendations that students that are level 3 or lower would automatically be placed in an EL class? Is that something that you discussed with anyone?
We usually have the counselors at the school. These are primarily juniors and seniors coming to the country seeking a high school diploma, and we usually allow the counselors and their host families a lot of leeway in placing students. I would venture to guess many of these students belong in EL classes and are not taking EL classes. And even in the example of the student from Brazil I had, his English skills were almost non-existent in September, but by May and June he was doing quite well in school and doing quite well, at least conversationally. But most of these students are not taking EL classes.
So you really haven't had that discussion then with folks. Okay. Thank you.
Thank you for the amount of work you put into that presentation.
No, simple. Okay, thank you.
Before we move on, I see there are a bunch of Cal Poly students in here. I'm assuming that Mr. Miller's had you come to this, because that's the word I got from my wife, who's also a teacher. Well, first of all, I want to welcome you to our board meeting tonight. You've seen quite a board meeting, so thank you for what you're doing. Moving on, Dr. Prater.
Thank you. And
And those from Cal Poly, I concur with President Unger. I think education today, if I were a youngster going through college, I would really have to feel it in my core because of all the doom and gloom. But I agree, it's such an important field, and I hope you pursue it. Okay. I would like to, if I could, have Rita Delkiskamp come on up, and she and Jackie Kirk Martinez, Amy Shields, and Amelia Samoz have been working on drafts of the SMART goals, annualized. And these are basically the adopted initiatives broken down into yearly objectives. And I'll stop. Rita, there you go.
Yeah, I guess I don't have to do much work anymore. So, yes, this is our team. And I'm just going to start us off by reminding everyone what the SMART goals are. We put notes up there because those are a way for us to measure our progress. So they're specific, they're measurable. We need to be realistic in that we can achieve them. They're relevant to what our needs are in the district and timely. When they're being assessed and how they're being assessed, and that it's important at that time to assess that need. So Jackie and Amelia are going to just provide two samples tonight of our work.
So you remember the 10 initiatives that you adopted had subsections in each initiative. And so we have put together a template that will help you and us guide our 5-year plan. So we're going to go to initiative number 1, and that's that we will achieve substantial academic gains with specific student population. So on the left-hand side, that's the initiative. What we've done is we've outlined the SMART goal. So this is in small font purposefully because this is a draft and we're just going through the template, what it looks like for you. And then when we have it in a final draft, Dr. Prater will be sharing these with you individually or in pairs. So we have broken down, as you remember, the initiative number 1 had A through E, I think F. Yes, A through E. And we have broken it down into kind of like objectives, goals and objectives like you might see in an IEP, because they do need to be measurable. We're taking 1 year at a time. We are looking at the bell curve, how you look at goals when you start. You start at a low level or a slow progression. Then you get some momentum, and then you bring it back down a little bit because you get to that higher level at 80%. It's hard to make those gains as quickly at the last year or two of the initiatives. So if you take a look at, let's take A1 at the top, by June 2012, San Luis Coastal will increase the percentage of EL, and then in number 2, increase the percentage of EL learners who attain English proficiency, and so on and so forth. So it goes down A through E. Then at the bottom, and you will see this for every initiative, 1 through 10, we are 9/10 of the way through, and that has given us a lot of opportunity to really dig deep and see what is it in store for the district. What do we want to do with those initiatives at the district level, as well as bringing it to the site level and into the classroom? So then we've taken those initiatives and looked at, okay, what are the district actions that need to take place in order to be able to implement those initiatives? So we look at some of the goals: increase EL program and intervention resources. What does that look like? Well, what do we have right now? Right now we have a 1.0 FTE K-12 EL TOSA. What are we going to need to make sure that we can move towards meeting those goals that you saw at the top? Well, we may need 12 intervention sections for EL math and reading K-12, so on and so forth. Well, what we haven't done is the estimated cost, and that's the work of Russell and Julie and their team to work out the estimated costs. So that's for initiative number 1. That, again, goes all the way through 10. And now Amelia will give you one more sample.
And Jackie, I would like it to be noted that what the team is really trying to do is
put this to the classroom floor.
Absolutely.
In other words, the proposed additions really are as much as possible anchored to the real lives of teachers at the sites. And that's what we're trying to do with these, to make them real, to make them practical and doable.
So that's a great district forum. Principals will take it back to their staff so that we can all decide together what the final group of standardized tools will be for all of our classrooms, K through 12 or K through 3. Primary grades will probably look different than a middle school or a ninth grade science class. So we're going to be looking at that very, very closely. The baseline expenditures reflect what was spent last year, an estimate, so that it doesn't reflect what we've spent over the last 2 years. You know, there's been some reduction in the last couple of years due to the state budget cuts. So we're in process of estimating the costs of what a classroom of the future might look like, and we'll continue refining that. The EdTech committee looked at all the initiatives. So we have technology embedded into probably all but two of the initiatives at this point. So I'm looking for ways to put it in the other two as well, because it's a given these days. Our students expect it. They want it. It's very motivational, and we get a high level of student engagement when we're using technology. So we're looking forward to continuing the process and refining it and getting your input as well. Thank you.
I'd just like to weigh in, even though I'm uninvited. I'm going to invite myself anyway, and let you guys know that this amount of work that's been done on this is exceptional. And what it provides for the budget process is a very unique and I don't think duplicated too many places process by which we can create a budget. We can create a baseline budget for ourselves on the idea that we're opening the classrooms. And what's it going to take to do that? And then we can take our SMART goals off of the initiatives and cost those out as added value items to be taught inside the classroom. This is the most exciting part about the initiatives from my perspective, is the idea that I can actually understand what's going to happen with the money once we start allocating it. It's crystal clear, and it presents a complete circle within the process of resources, teaching, student achievement, teacher efforts. Everything is connected in a way that even I get it, and that's pretty good. So I'm really excited about the process, and I want to recognize their work. It's just been exceptional, and the hard work that goes into it. And you Cal Poly guys, you ought to take a look at this as a model to follow in the future years.
And I want to interject as well, because I've heard Russell use the word student achievement more in the last month than I ever would have believed. And so I'm honored by that. I think that's a phenomenal, phenomenal growth point. And the other piece I would like to say is I concur. The team over here that you see is, and I'd like to add Julie into that as well. They've really just been integrating. This has been a collective effort. It's not one person in a room doing it by him or herself. This really has been a team in a conference room taking in feedback and thoughts and ideas and challenging each other. They came up with this template, and they came up with the idea of a measurable outcome, a yearly measurable outcome tied to action steps, meaning this is the specific thing, these are the specific things we're going to do, and providing a context, as Russell said, to budget. And you can see how it's hitting the classroom floor. So it's very specific, it's very real, and hopefully all these things will be linked together. So you as the board will be very well informed as to what should be happening. You guys, thank you very much.
And I was just going to say that it's nice to see Russell excited about things like this. Usually the most excitement we get out of Russell at a meeting is when we talk adjournment.
Let's move on then to the update on the mathematics program. If there are no comments, Mrs. Delkiskamp.
Thank you. If we could, thank you, Kim. So this is just a quick update to let you know what we did. We had a wonderful meeting on April 19th. It was during spring break, and yet we had lots of people who were willing to come and join us. Oh, and I don't have that little remote, do I? Thank you. And the participants were six teachers from our district, three Cal Poly professors, two mathematics consultants, and then five staff, mostly from our instructional services department, but also some administrators. We started in powerful conversations. And because that was hard work, we did take another little break in between and just kind of had some fun with math. And you can try this at home if you want, or whip out your calculator on your telephone, right? How does that math trick work? If you take any three-digit number and you pop it in there and you go through those steps, you'll end up with that three-digit number at the end. And there was a little bit of discussion. Some people who said, well, the reason you can figure out why that works is because of your computational skills. And then there were other people in the room who said, well, no, it's really your reasoning skills. And then we all just sang Kumbaya and said it's both. And round six was free choice. Decide who you want to be in your group. And we did a gallery walk to see all of the ideas that had been presented so that we could all walk away that day with an understanding of everything that was shared. And before we left, we said, well, if we take into consideration all of what we've discussed today, and we really focus on the purpose for our work, which is our students, what do we want our graduates, our graduate mathematicians to look like, to be able to do? And so these were all terms that were shared by the group. And so that's our goal there, to produce that type of student. So finally, I just wanted to give you an overview of our next steps. We had our think tank meeting, which we named it, on the 19th. Our core teams meeting on the 19th of this month to develop a draft of similar to what we've done with the SMART goals, with the initiatives to develop a similar template to share with our sub-articulation committee, which will have representation from all of our sites. And then, as you can see, we'll kind of do the accordion thing, come back with that input, go back out to site and district administration, come back and rework it a little more, have that shared with site planning staff, and work it a little more until we've got our final plan for the following year. And that's our update.
Thank you very much. Any questions from board members? Mr. Angel.
Thank you for all your work. Both the last two presentations were great.
Hey, let's move on then to our resolutions. Our resolution number one, which is resolution 141011. Mr. Robinette.
Well, tomorrow the California Department of Education has designated it as the Day of the Teacher. I know that CTA is very active up in Sacramento near the Department of Education advocating for a resolution I think we have coming up here. But we do want to honor our teachers and all of our certificated personnel with this resolution.
Great. And I know it's short on time, but, you know, I think we have a couple of resolutions here that it bears reading in public. And so I think what I'd like to do is ask our most recently retired teacher school board member to read resolution number one.
Thank you, President Unger. Whereas it is appropriate that we recognize our teachers and express gratitude for the interest and concern they have for our students, and whereas teachers frequently and often selflessly participate in non-classroom activities that enhance the education of our students, and whereas along with academic instruction, teachers provide students with valuable guidance, support, and encouragement towards helping students become tomorrow's leaders, and whereas providing quality education to our young people continues to be our never-ending challenge as it represents society's greatest and most lasting gift to new generations, and whereas the future of our state and country depends largely on the work of dedicated and professional teachers, and whereas school teachers are relied upon to ensure that our children receive proper instruction in a wide range of subjects, now, therefore, be it resolved that the Board of Trustees of the San Luis Coastal Unified School District proclaims May 11, 2011, as Day of the Teacher and encourages all citizens to participate in observance to express their appreciation. And if it's passed, it'll be adopted this 10th day of May, 2011. Yes, I'd like to move that we adopt this resolution.
I would love to second that motion.
It's been moved by Mr. Quisenberry and seconded by Mr. Angel. Is there any public comment or board comment about this? Okay, seeing none, Mrs. Holmes.
Mr. Quisenberry?
Aye.
Mr. Angel?
Aye.
Mrs. Roger?
Aye.
Mr. Unger?
Yes.
Mr. Buckman? 5-0.
Okay, then let's move on to item number 2, Mr. Robinette.
Yes, we've already celebrated the week of the school administrator. We just did a resolution honoring the day.
Provide valuable services to the schools and students of the district, and whereas classified school employees contribute to the establishment and promotion of a positive instructional environment, and whereas classified school employees serve a vital role in providing for the welfare and safety of the district students, and whereas classified employees employed by the district and represented by California School Employees Association Service Employees International and Confidential Employee Units strive for excellence in all areas relative to the educational community. Now, therefore, be it resolved that the Board of Trustees of the San Luis Coastal Unified School District hereby recognizes and wishes to honor the contribution of classified school employees to quality education in the state of California and in the San Luis Coastal Unified School District, and declares the week of May 15th through the 21st, 2011, as Classified School Employee Week. I move that we adopt Resolution 15-10-11.
I'd like to second that motion.
Okay, it's been moved and seconded. Is there any discussion? Is there anybody from the public that would like to comment on this? Mrs. Holmes.
Mr. Angel?
Aye.
Mr. Buckman? Mr. Unger?
Yes.
Mrs. Roger?
Yes.
Mr. Quisenberry?
Yes.
5-0.
And then let's move on to item number 3, supporting California's Week of Action on Urgency Funding. Dr. Prater, this is Resolution 16-10-11.
President Unger, would you... Basically, this is a California School Board Association and other lobbying groups are urging school districts to adopt resolutions supporting May 9th through the 13th as a week of action to lobby legislators urging them to pass a temporary tax extension to fund public education.
Okay, and I'm going to ask Mr. Buckman if he would read this as a delegate to the California School Boards Association.
Thank you, sir. San Luis Coastal School District Resolution Number 16-10-11. In support of California's Week of Action, May 9th through the 13th, 2011. Whereas the San Luis Coastal Unified School District opposes a cuts-only state budget and supports a balanced budget with a combination of cuts and revenue extensions, and whereas our schools and students are in a state of emergency until lawmakers pass a balanced budget and approve the needed revenue extensions to support education funding, and whereas over the last several years, K-12 education funding has taken a disproportionate amount of budget cuts, and whereas state and local funding for California schools has been cut by more than $18 billion, or about $1,900 per student in the last 3 years, and whereas San Luis Coastal Unified School District has cut millions from its budget over the past 3 years as a result of ongoing statewide cuts to education funding, and whereas the San Luis Coastal Unified School District will be forced to cut substantial but unknown additional monies from its budget if the legislature does not pass revenue extensions, and whereas to begin to reserve To reverse this downward spiral, Californians must preserve the revenues that enable us to invest in our schools and students. And whereas we must take action to show the true destructions happening to our schools and communities, and whereas the California School Boards Association, Association of California School Administrators, California Teachers Association, and other members of the Ed Coalition support local communities in planning events and activities throughout the state the week of May 9th through the 13th. Now, therefore, be it resolved that the San Luis Coastal Unified School District fully supports the May 9th through 13th week of action by educators, administrators, education support professionals, parents, students, and other labor groups, so long as not to interrupt school operations or classroom activities to protect California's future and the future of students and working families across the state. I'd like to make the motion.
And I'll second that motion.
It's been moved by Mr. Buckman and seconded by Mrs. Roger. Is there any discussion? Anybody from the public that would like to speak to this item? Seeing no one, Mrs. Holmes?
Mr. Buckman?
Yes.
Mrs. Roger?
Yes.
Mr. Quessenberry?
Yes.
Mr. Unger?
Yes.
And Mr. Angel?
Yes.
5-0.
Thank you very much. Let's move on to item number 4, Mr. Guy.
Good evening, Jeff Guy, Facilities Director. Good evening to the Board and Administration. The facilities topic this evening is the Pacheco Transitional Kindergarten Building. I'd like to note that initially when we were looking at the facility, it was our interest to put it within the existing building for residents as to what the project was about. We did meet after that board meeting. This lower location here was a suggestion by the local neighborhood. We did not select that space because there is no existing utility infrastructure. Wastewater is over here. We have domestic water there that would have to serve that, or it would have to come from the existing multipurpose room. So it's basically a start from scratch location. The second location is right there, which is the existing Sun and Fun building. That location was somewhat attractive because we tried to think if we could utilize that space for play. That would actually displace two programs, which we would have to find housing for, which was not favorable because we're not sure where we could put them. This location here was next to the existing kindergarten, and we were thinking about putting play in this location. But it's also sharing the space with first grade classes, which would be disruptive to the program. And it also bumps a first grade class up to these portables, and it kind of creates a domino effect. This location here was considered, but the play area is very small. It would have to require existing retaining wall demolition and relocation of utilities to expand the space. Not very cost effective. Our final location was here, which is the location that was featured for a building back in the mid-90s. There's already existing utilities and infrastructure to expand in that location and was determined to be the ninth classroom expansion at that time. And that's a little history regarding to our location. Since then, we've worked on categorical exemptions and preliminary environmental assessments. The categorical exemption is a state code that determines that a project is not significantly significant to the environment, does not have a significant impact to the environment. There you go. And it's based on minor additions to schools, which is up to 10 buildings or an increase of 25% of the capacity for enrollment. This particular project does not meet either of those. It is well under that. We also did a preliminary environmental assessment to double check to see that our environmental impact was minimal. And that's what you have in your package for your discussion and evaluation. And Russell is going to speak to that.
What we would recommend tonight is that the board
consider the information that you've been delivered and that you approve the findings of the preliminary environmental assessment and make the determination that the project qualifies for a self-mitigated categorical exemption, Class 14, minor additions to schools, and authorize the superintendent or designee to file the necessary documents.
Okay. Thank you. I'm going to go to the public. We have two people who'd like to speak. The first person is, and I'm sorry, my pronunciation is terrible, Odile Ariel, if you'd come on up, please. And she'll be followed by Gary Dwyer.
My name is Odile Ariel. You have received some correspondence regarding this matter, including a letter of from a lawyer who disputes the findings regarding the exemption. I have lived in Ferrigny Road since 1978. I have seen the school close because it was supposedly too small for expansion. Then I have seen it turn into a magnet school. I have lived through all the upheaval the school district brought to this neighborhood. I will briefly speak about three things: traffic, parking, and noise, very briefly on each one. The mitigation measures written in 95-96 required that the school district initiate a traffic management program in coordination with the city and neighbors. They never did. The issue of the traffic on Ferrigny was very serious. Anyway, during the first years of Pacheco in this area, traffic had become so bad on Ferrigny at time of drop-off that it backed up from the Highland stop sign all the way down to Foothill. And still, the school district did nothing about it. Neighbors turned to the city. If the preschool is located on Ferrigny, all 25 cars will want to park there because they have to bring their small children to their classroom. Where are they going to park when the street and the drop-off are already full at time of drop-off and pick-up? In our driveways, they already do it. In the red zones, they already do it. There is no room left. You have completely impacted Ferrigny, even though the mitigation specified you were not supposed to impact it. The last point concerns the noise coming from the heating and cooling system. I was surprised to read an analysis in the new report from David Foote stating this noise was not any louder than a passing car. First, a passing car moves on. This noise is permanent. It's like having a car idling in front of your door all day long. Secondly, this noise proved to be particularly unnerving when the other portables were installed in 2002 and neighbors could not open their windows facing the street anymore. We complained to the school board and they instructed the staff to build a fence around the portables to block the noise. We have therefore already established that this noise is significant and cannot be ignored. This is my conclusion. The well-being of the school is linked to the well-being of the neighborhood. You cannot have a healthy school if you don't have a healthy neighborhood. You cannot brush aside mitigation measures and keep piling problems over problems. As members of the school board and members of this community, you have a responsibility towards the school, but you also have a responsibility towards the neighborhood. You have been very, very rough towards this one. There are other places... Excuse me, my mouth is dry. There are other places for the preschool, some on this campus, on the Pacheco campus, and you have encountered some on the old Pacheco campus where you have some empty portables. Please take a look and reconsider. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Dwyer.
I've prepared some hard copy documentation. Please don't be threatened by it. I'm only going to refer to one page.
If you'd like to give that to Mrs. Holmes, she'll make sure that we get it. And we do like to keep the comments to about 3 minutes, if you could please, sir.
I'm a member of the Throop Park Neighborhood Association and a professor at the College of Architecture and Environmental Design at Cal Poly. This group that I represent has many members that have spent their entire professional lives working in education in all different branches throughout the city and the county. We're not against schools. We're trying to understand better how to have a reasonable neighborhood. We come here because we're upset, and we're upset because the traffic mitigation required in 1995 has not all been implemented. The traffic congestion is still terrible, and the additional traffic generated by the proposed preschool would make a dangerous situation even worse, and someone's going to get hurt. There's photographs in this documentation that's going around that prove the existing conditions. We have been good neighbors and requested parking restrictions on the east side of Farini. The restrictions are completely ignored, and we have been told by parking officials and the police that they don't have the time to enforce the clearly posted restrictions. Referring to item 6A on Exhibit B, that's a horizontal format in the packet that I passed out, is the mitigation monitoring program. It suggests eliminating parking on the school side of Farini. This would be a good idea, as it would increase visibility for the cars entering and exiting the drop-off area. Horizontal sight distances are really important when you have that many people moving around. Item 2 suggests staff should park in the lot on Cuesta Drive. Today, there were 15 empty spaces in that lot, and there were 10 school-related cars parked on the school side of Farini. No cars were parked on the school side of Cuesta or Cerro Romaldo. None. Zero. It's very common. Our biggest concern is safety. Patricia and Highland have speed limits of 25 miles an hour, and yet there are no posted speeds on the streets surrounding Pacheco School. In fact, the most recent traffic study done by professional traffic engineers indicates the average speed of almost 35 miles an hour. The photos in the packet clearly show a confusing and dangerous situation that will become even more dangerous with the increase in traffic.
To the left of it, is that a sandbox or sand area? Or
that's an existing primary wood chip box or engineered wood fiber. The play area would be next to it with the building to the right.
Just one other question. What is kind of the length of that drop-off drive there, approximately? 50 feet?
Off the top of my head, it's 10 cars.
Okay, thank you.
Maybe.
Mrs. Roger.
Thank you. Let me go back to the question that I asked before, but not at the appropriate time. We have been in receipt of this correspondence from an attorney regarding this matter, and I wonder if we had consulted our attorney.
We have, and upon receipt of the hand-delivered letter that's in your packet yesterday, we called our attorney, and he assured us that we meet all the conditions of the categorical exemption. He said that he wishes to thank the neighborhood for their efforts, but that we should move forward with the categorical exemption if that's the interest of the board. The other issue probably that needs to be talked about is that the preschool isn't going to have the same hours as the elementary school has. So the traffic mitigation, traffic issues, are going to be a matter of timing. And so it won't be adding to a current number of cars. It's going to have its own component. And we estimate on the outside edge that there could be 25 cars,
but we've yet to establish the size, the eligibility, the mix and the components of the preschool program to give any assurance to that number, so it's just an estimate.
Are there any other Mr. Randall?
No, you're adding. Are you adding parking spaces? Is that
something I saw or moving a fence at all?
No. We're not going to make any adjustments beyond the portable and the playground area.
Okay.
So again, what you're asking is that we approve, the recommendation is that we approve the findings of the preliminary environmental assessment and make the determination that the project qualifies for self-mitigation, categorical exemption, class 14, minor additions to schools.
Correct.
And then go ahead and authorize the superintendent or his designee to file the necessary documents?
Correct.
Okay. Is there a board member? I don't see any more. Mr. Buckman?
I do have one other time.
Yeah, go ahead.
On Felton, on the drop-off, that's my guess is with the traditional kindergarten that the parent's not going to drop that small child off and have them walk down. That they're probably going to want to walk down with the child. Is that going to work with the existing drop-off zone?
They can drop off at any point they wish to walk from.
Okay, that's
it's not required that they come into this area. They have choices. Currently, we have four to five buses that drop off there.
Okay, so the current drop off is along Felton.
For the transportation provided by the district.
Oh, and okay.
That's largely what takes place there. 227 kids are dropped off there each day.
We used to use it for. Okay, thank you.
Mr. Angel?
I think the district's done a lot of work. I know I asked Mr. Mayfield personally about the Sun and Fun Room, and he mentioned why that can't be used. Wanted to share with the board that Pacheco Sun and Fun is the most attended Sun and Fun, so moving Sun and Fun would pose an option for our working parents, pose a problem for our working parents. And then I'm there quite a bit, and I haven't seen much traffic. The worst examples would be back to school night, open house, and then the fiesta days. So I think you guys have done a good work, and I would, for one, make a motion to approve this.
We have a motion to approve. Do we have a second? I'll go ahead and I'll second this then. Is there any further discussion from the board? Seeing none, I'll call the question. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
No.
Okay. So the motion fails 3-2. Do we have another motion?
What's the no's for on discussion? No.
No reason. Bring it back to discussion.
Absolutely. The motion fails, so we're back to discussion.
Now, we don't really have an alternative, because what we're asking you to do is approve a categorical exemption. Minus a categorical exemption, then we're going to have to do a full CEQA process on this. That's been done twice before in the past.
Has the district made any attempt to deal with the parking issue on Farini as far as perhaps staff or
yes.
directing where parents should drop students off or...
We have done mitigations in the aspect of that buses do not go down Farini except by mistake. One bus driver was a substitute, went the wrong way down Farini. We keep them up on Felton. So the buses all go up there. We direct the staff to try and park in the parking lot, but it's parking. You know, and so all we can do is ask. In terms of parent drop-offs, most of the parents do drop off in the front of the school. There are some who choose to drop off on Farini too. But then again, it's a public street. They can do what we can only ask. But we do our own in the aspect of having Mr. Mayfield being supervising the particular drop-offs, moving the traffic as best he's able, when he's able, and our bus drivers are directed not to go down Farini.
Newsletters that go out to the parents twice a year at least. Parking is always a feature of that memo that goes out to all the parents. And staff are encouraged to park here, and the parents are encouraged to drop off their children on Cerro Romaldo as well.
Where would you put the kindergarten? You know,
I'm sympathetic to the concerns of the community members who spoke, and I understand the necessity for a preschool program to be placed on this site. So I'm just wondering, how can we try to be good neighbors with them? I mean, you've looked at several different locations. Can we just tell our staff that we have control over, because we don't have control over the parents or the community members traveling on Farini, is it possible to tell them that they just simply, that parking is not available to school employees?
We can attempt to do that. I mean, it's more of a request than it is an order. You can't order people, but
I understand. Yeah. But in the spirit of being good neighbors, you know, if we're kind of
yes,
if we approach it seriously,
yes,
with that staff, and then the issue of noise, I think, was brought up. And I'm wondering if we're going to have, I'm trying to remember back to the noise problem before was from the HVAC units?
HVAC on those buildings up at the corner of Felton. And yeah, when we put those in, there wasn't a fence there, and the noise was of a concern to the neighbors. So we built a noise fence, if you will, to block it.
Sort of a sound attenuating fence?
Yeah. Yeah.
Addition to that, we did sound enclosures for the HVAC units as well.
Okay, so is that something that we would need to consider for this building as it's
a consideration. The distance is significantly further, but we were going to make a determination when we hear it and see what the noise is like, and place a fence that would be perpendicular to the building to deflect, similar to the fence that's on Farini.
So if we were to position it here and it was problematic for the neighbors because of the noise, then we would do some sound monitoring and we would do sound attenuation as necessary.
Mm-hmm.
Again, in the spirit
yes.
of being good neighbors.
Sure.
Okay. Well, then I'm prepared to support it.
Yeah, I'll support it also.
To back up, I know Mr. Mayfield has been out there quite a bit. He asked you to... once or twice parked in a red area, and he said, "Strangely, I need you to move your car." And, you know, so he does do that quite a bit, and he has put out in the newsletter that we need to be good neighbors several times.
There's also a notification that he puts on windshields for people that park incorrectly. He caught you.
Did you get one of those, Phil?
No, I have not.
Uh-huh.
Just one last question. I guess as we look at, is it Sierra Romaldo?
Down Sierra Romaldo, lower road there.
Do we have issues with traffic and parking on Sierra Romaldo?
Yes.
Anybody from the community or?
Yes.
Yes, okay.
Yes,
okay, so that's not an option.
I'd like to remind the board just so that they can feel maybe a little more assured about this, but Pacheco is one of our 15 schools, and every single
considerable effort. I'm just trying to find a way to assure that we will do what we can. I mean, we have rights and we can exercise our rights, but we can also try to be good neighbors, and you know, in the process, and we can send you out in a reflective vest and get that traffic moving right along there.
Okay, is there any other discussion from the board? Okay. I believe I heard a couple of folks say that they would support this, so I'm going to bring it back and see if somebody else would like to make a motion on this.
Well, I'll move approval of the item number 4, and I'm not sure exactly how to state that, but the approval of item number 4.
Okay, so it's been moved by Mr. Quesenberry, seconded by Mrs. Roger. Any further discussion from the board? Seeing none, I'll take a vote. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Carries 5-0.
Item number 5, award of bid number 232, purchase of 5 portable buildings placed at various sites. Mr. Miller.
Thank you, Mr. President. And this is in conjunction with our preschool program, and what we've gone out to is a bid to price out the modular classroom, that would be necessary to fulfill the requirements. And we got 4 very nice bids back. Clearly, the winning bid was Silver Creek Industries. They give us the lowest price on the portables that we're going to need in order to fulfill this project. Staff recommends that the Board of Education award bid number 232 to Silver Creek Industries of Paris, California, for the facilities listed below in a total amount of $302,852 to be paid for from developer fees in conjunction to mitigate the growth of our district.
Mr. Quisenberry?
Just a question. I noticed that the bids went out for 5 portables, and then on the following page, 5-2, I see 4. Is what's
at Baywood, we are also accommodating a categorical exemption requirement. And one of the ways we do that is by keeping the project under $100,000. So we've split the project into 2 portables, and in the first phase we're going to put down a portable and make some improvements. I think the estimate's around $89,000. In the second phase we also have to accommodate a fire road and a number of other auxiliary issues to just the building, so we're going to maintain we're going to hold that project until sometime around Christmas, and then we can go forward with the improvements necessary. Much of the Baywood cost is in ground improvements, not buildings. So we have to clear that way. And that's a lot of categorical CEQA type of processes to go through, the burial site issue and all of that.
Thank you, Russ.
Okay, Mrs. Roger?
Yeah, I just had a quick question, Mr. Miller. The top 2 bidders are actually quite close together. When you look at the ad alternates, do you anticipate that we'd be exercising any of those ad alternates? We're not privy to what they are.
We're not going to do the solar tube skylights at this point, and we don't have to do the fire sprinkler. In one site, we do a fire sprinkler.
Baywood.
The other ones, we're not required to.
Okay. Thank you.
They were close, but the companies are both very reputable. They're both very dependable. So just going with the lowest bid was about the best tiebreaker we could come up with.
Gotcha.
Mr. Buckman, did you have a comment?
My comment was going to be on the sprinklers. And I had talked to Russell this morning. Russell, can you just give us a little more on the requirements for the sprinklers?
School district's requirements for fire sprinklers are a bit different than commercial buildings in the city. And we're Mark had asked a question whether or not we had to meet the City of San Luis Obispo's requirements for fire sprinklers as they have in commercial buildings, and the answer is no. We have to meet a Department of State Architecture known as DSA's requirements. It's a bigger fish in the ocean. And so what we look at is the proximity of other fire suppression systems. And because Baywood has fire suppression systems next door to the location, then we have to put it in. If there are no fires, now you figure this one out. If there are no fire suppression systems near this building, we don't have to put one in.
So let me get this. So the city's requiring fire suppression.
That doesn't count.
In its new construction, but as we're putting children into portable location and award the bid number 232 to Silver Creek Industries.
I'll second.
It's been moved by Mr. Buckman and seconded by Mrs. Roger. Any other discussion? All in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Carries 5-0. Let's move on then to item number 6, approval of 0.2 FTE speech and language pathologist position. Mrs. Kirk-Martinez.
It's on. Good evening. Doing our projections for next year and working
the schedule around the best we can, still meeting the needs of our students, requiring speech and language development. We're asking for the board to approve a 0.2 full-time equivalency. That's one day a week of a speech pathologist in addition to what we have right now. And that's due to the increased identification, the rise in autism, the language pragmatics.
Mr. Quisenberry?
Will there be an existing speech pathologist who will pick this up, or do you anticipate hiring an additional person?
We have somebody who's willing to add to their contract.
Thank you.
Any other questions? Okay. Would somebody like to make a motion on this?
I move that we go ahead and approve item number 6.
I'll second that.
It's been moved by Mr. Angel and seconded by Mr. Quisenberry. Let's take a vote. All in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? It carries 4-0.
Thank you.
Let's move on then to item number 7, acceptance of 2010-2011 Personnel Commission budget and notice of public hearing. Mr. Robinette.
Thank you. Ed Code requires that the Personnel Commission establish and propose an independent budget, independent of the general fund, even though it's funded out of the general fund, that the board has to approve so that we can put it on for a public hearing. So what you have attached here is the proposed Personnel Commission budget for 2011-2012. Once again, this last year we were significantly under budget because we did away with the personnel director position for much of the year. And this next year, though, I'm proud to say we managed to cut an additional 4% out of our estimated budget. We've been doing that every year, trying to just be responsible stewards of the district funds. But what we are asking is for the board to approve the Personnel Commission budget for next year, and also we would love to have a board member, if possible, attend the next commission meeting in May 25th as to be part of the public hearing. And I can answer any questions about the budget the board may have.
I missed for a second. So do we approve this budget, or do we just receive the budget?
Yeah, you actually receive the budget. It'll all be folded into the big budget that Russell does. So you
okay.
Receive it. Thank you.
Okay, great. Mr. Buckman.
I just wanted to take a moment to recognize the Personnel Commission and all the work they do. I get the minutes, and they're dealing with merit, and merit's always tricky, and they do a great job.
Okay. I was looking at my calendar on the 25th, and I have a staff development meeting I need to go to that day. Is there anybody that would like to attend that meeting?
I'm free currently.
Okay, so with the board's consent, Mr. Angel will be our representative.
4 p.m.
At 4 p.m. on the 25th. Is there any further discussion from board members? Okay. Seeing none, then do we need to take a vote on this, or I don't think we
do. I don't
think
so.
Okay, great. Let's move on then to the action consent agenda. And please let me know if you'd like anything pulled. Item number 9, approval of certificated and classified personnel items.
Pull.
Number 8, pull. Thank you. Number 9, approval of secondary school schedules for the 2011-2012 school year. Number 10, acceptance of donations. Number 11, disposition of surplus property. 12, approval of furniture and equipment requests. 13, approval of purchase orders. 14, approval of warrants and payroll. 15, approval of quarterly report on uniform complaint filings, the Williams settlement. Number 16, approval of proposed revisions to board policy 3270, sale and disposal of books, equipment, and supplies, our second reading. 17, action on claim against the district, Rosa Jimenez. I'm going to ask that we pull that one.
Cool. Oh, thank you.
Number 18, approval. And I'll second that. And I would not only second that, but I'll second your comments on Mrs. Shields, who I've had an opportunity to work with over the number of years. And she's a phenomenal person. I'm really excited that she's on the team. And she continues to be on the team in a different role. So all in favor of item number 8? Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Carries 4-0. Let's move on to item number 17. And the reason I wanted to pull this one is to just let the public know that typically we do reject the claims so that we're able to forward them on to our insurance company. And that's what the intent of this action will be.
Actually, I just want to make sure the board understands. The rejection of this claim is going to cause it to default into a workers' comp claim.
Right.
Because the individual was a volunteer. As a volunteer, they're treated as an employee under workers' comp law, and it'll become a workers' compensation issue as opposed to a liability issue.
Okay. Thank you very much. Any
comment on this?
Yes, Mr. Angel.
I've been to several snow days in my history, and I have not witnessed a lack of supervision or control by our school employees, so I just wanted to put that out there as claimed in this claim.
Okay, thank you. I'll go ahead and make the motion on item number 17. Would somebody like to second that?
I'll second it.
Mr. Quisenberry, all in favor? Aye.
Aye.
Carries 4-0. Let's move on to item number 20, advanced agenda. Is there anybody that would like to add anything to the agenda at this time?
No.
Okay, seeing no one, let's move on then to item number 21, which is reports by board members. Mr. Angel.
I was just reaching. Had an opportunity to attend a couple open houses since April. Morro Bay High was phenomenal. They had kids out there shearing sheep. They had people out there taking pictures. So I got some great pictures of my daughter from the photography class at Morro Bay High School. Then Los Osos Middle School, again, sticking with the coast. Best hamburgers on the coast for their open house, bar none. They provided music with dinner. You can't beat that, Mr. Balea. Is it Belay? Yeah, Belay. Bellier. How do you say it?
Bellier.
Great stuff. Great teaching going on at both sides at the school. Also, then San Luis High's open house and just another great event. Other than that, I think there's a carnival at C.L. Smith on Friday if you guys are up for it, and teach dinner.
Mr. Buckman.
Well, first of all, I want to know how Phil's football team is doing. He's the coach.
We do all right.
You play, okay.
They're a good group of kids.
Yeah, I got to watch Phil coach one time, and he's a great coach. First of all, I want to second Phil's comments about Morro Bay High School, and particularly, I've been to several other open houses as well. But in particular, I'd like to congratulate Los Osos Middle School. This was the first open house that was included the new PTSA unit. It's now a PTA school. Lots of activities going on, raised a lot of money, and I don't know how to say this. I got to be auctioneer somehow that night.
Did a good job.
Let's move on from there.
My money.
I got some money out of Phil. I also got to attend the state PTA convention with over 3,000 people from around the state of California. An excellent speech from Jerry Brown, and then able to attend a news conference in the back of the room with the governor as well. And he's a vibrant man. My last comment is there's still time to influence the budget, and I'm urging everybody to get in touch with their legislators. Perhaps the easiest way to do this is to go online to www.leginfo.ca.gov, and you'll be able to track down your legislator's email and just write them. Things are in flux up there, and I think your voice will make a difference.
Ms. Quisenberry.
Just a quick mention, I also went to Los Osos Middle School's open house, and I had an opportunity to go to Pathpoint and watch the People First meeting, which was very informative and inspirational. And I just had to tell you that Tim Fay is a Morro Bay High School graduate, and if you know him well enough, you can call him Bubba.
We need to be aware of that, and we need to be doing something about it. So that there you go. The other thing I just wanted to point out to people is in yesterday's Los Angeles Times front page article, big news, dual immersion works. As if we haven't known that for how long have we had Pacheco? Anybody want to venture a guess? What is it, 15 years? 14, 15 years? And from every year that I've been on the board, this is my 11th year, we've had reports from Pacheco about what a great school it does, what great work it's doing. Lo and behold, scientists have discovered, as if we didn't know, that kids who learn to read first in their native language become more proficient readers in their second language. So I'm glad the LA Times validates what we've been doing for all these years, and I'd invite you all to take a look at that article. With that, seeing no other business, we'll adjourn this meeting. Thank you.